There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Another hour of live local talk and a subject this hour that we've... we started talking about this years ago, and it was just the idea and discussion of it and some rulings that had happened, and then a tragedy happening in Kingston, Tennessee, and elsewhere that brought this conversation up about the coal ash at Berry Steam Plant, which... or Point Berry or whatever. We've always called it Berry Steam Plant. The place with the candy cane smokestacks as you're going up 43 on the west side of the Mobile River on the east side of 43. So, and power generation plant that it is, and generating the refuse from burning coal to make power, that coal ash. So that discussion's gone on for a while. We have moved to a point, as you know, over the last couple months, talking specifically about an event. The event now is coming up tomorrow night as the Alabama Department of Environmental Management, ADEM, holds a public hearing on Berry Steam Plant and the electrical generating plant there. To talk more about this, from Mobile Baykeeper, Casey Calloway and Cade Kistler joining us in studio. Thanks for being here, y'all.
So glad to be here, Sean. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, this is something that y'all, we've talked about. It's been years.
Yep.
Years we've been talking about it. Y'all have been working on this, trying to, number one, alert people to this is a thing.
Right.
And then number two, talking about the procedure of how you get rid of the coal ash.
Right.
If you could ever, you never get rid of it, where you put it.
Right.
Because you, yeah.
Where do you secure it?
Yes, where you secure it.
Probably better. How do you close it permanently in a way that's going to be protective of the public for the long term? The public and our natural resources for the long term.
So it is currently in these ponds, as a these holding ponds there, and it's right. It was made wet at one point so that ash didn't get in there, right? The slurry?
It's also an easy way to clean the system. You essentially wash it with a hose out of the back door of the plant into the neighboring wetlands.
Okay.
And that's what they did in the 50s when we didn't have a clue how toxic and what was in coal. And that residual that's in the ash. So putting it where they put it wasn't malicious or egregious. It was
just
what everybody
was done.
Did. Exactly, exactly. But I think, you know, over time, everyone started to figure out that it is toxic. There are a lot of chemicals in that. There's a lot of heavy metals in that. Arsenic, boron, cadmium, mercury. I mean, you name it. And the more we take out of the stack. So when we got the mercury out of the air emissions.
Right.
We pulled it back down into the coal ash. So we've got a lot of heavy chemicals, a lot of heavy metals in that ash that's sitting in a pond. 600-acre pond, now almost between 16 and 22 million tons of coal ash there.
Now, this is, and you talk about that density of it. And that's because people say, well, okay, if we went and burned a bucket of coal out here, the ash has all those things, but it at a smaller, it's the density, right?
It's so much.
The volume, yeah, the amount the volume of it, and the quantity, sure. Yeah.
So, because if that was spread out evenly over some gigantic area, it might not be the issue, but it is specifically here where it can...
22 million tons is Alabama Power's current number. The BP oil disaster at over 200 million gallons... is 20 times, so the coal ash at Plant Berry is 20 times the volume of the BP oil disaster.
You'll think that. That's
and, you know, kind of when you think about, and comparing them is hard, they're not the same. Mm-hmm. What does oil do? What does coal ash do? How do you clean up oil? How do you clean up coal ash? I mean, think about that fire, what's in your fireplace or the fire pit at the end of the night. how fine it is, if it's dry, and you can blow it. It's going to go out into the wind when it's dry. And when it's wet, it's so fine, it's sinking through your hands. It's finer than the finest silts in the Delta. Oil, at least, if you don't mess with it, floats. So you can scrape it off the top of the water. You can do a lot more with oil to clean it up.
You talk about the cleanup process, and I want to go back for a little bit of time here and talk about this Kingston, Tennessee. This is something y'all talk about a lot as an example of what the fear is here. Can you give the short version of what happened at Kingston and then what the effects and the remediation were, okay?
Yeah, so in Kingston, Tennessee, just upstream of the Tennessee River, which is not far from the Alabama state line, in 2008, in December 2008, there was a massive coal ash spill. That spill was from an 80-acre pond, so a much smaller facility, and it spilled into two rivers that feed into the Tennessee. Homes were knocked off their foundations by the amount of coal ash that left that area.
There was a levee burst.
Right, exactly. So it rained. They got several inches of rain. It's an earthen dam, very similar to what's at Plant Berry, made of dirt and coal ash, just like, again, at Berry Steam Plant, a dam made of dirt and coal ash. And after some heavy rain, you just imagine if you played, you know, it's an engineer version, but if you played in the sandbox as a kid and you built up a dam and you put that water hose on it, right, it's eventually going to give way if enough water hits it. So that's essentially what happened. They had some water seeping through the side of that thing, and it gave way. Ash went into both those rivers. They had fish kills downstream. You know, there's videos of people wondering if they'll ever be able to swim in those rivers again. Houses were literally knocked off their foundation. You can guarantee that property value went down real quickly.
Right.
And it ended up costing about $3 billion. And one thing to
there's keep, a, yeah, so that's yeah. the that's 3 billion.
3 billion is the 2 to 3 billion is the final cost of the impacts to the environment, the impacts to real estate, the cleanup costs, the impacts to human health, all those things added up. And you know, there's a really local connection to this because just recently, the Lanyap interviewed former U.S. Attorney for Southern District of Alabama, Richard Moore, and he talked about his, you know, impressions from being the Inspector General of TVA at that time. So he was the person in charge of accountability and saw that spill, and he was blown away by how bad it was, by how much, you know, TVA did to kind of say this was a non-issue when it really was a major issue. And he said, looking at Plant Berry, if he had a magic wand, he'd make sure all that coal ash was dug up and moved, because this is not something that can happen here. We can't let it happen.
And that's the question, right? That so for everybody to know that something has to be done. Right. As per the directive of the ruling, something has to be done. You can't keep on this way. So the options are cap in place, right? And we talked about that last week of covering it with some sort of covering and keeping it in place there, but with a tarp or something over the top of it, right?
Right. And it's an expensive tarp. It's a very nice.
Yeah, I don't know the right word for it. I came up with tarp.
It's a little better than AstroTurf. I mean, it's a significant and substantial tarp, but it's only on the top. There's nothing underneath. There's nothing on the bottom. There's nothing on the sides, essentially. So, again, you're still looking at the same opportunity for overtopping, the same opportunity for a breach, the same opportunity for the levee, for the dam to break. Cade said Saturday we were coming back from we did a little trip up the Delta to take a look at everything because the water's been so high.
Mm-hmm.
And Cade said, you know, the levees in New Orleans were dry. They were made of land. And yet in Katrina, they sat soaking for too long. And then they failed. That's the same kind of thing that could happen if we're not careful, if we don't do it right. We are advocating for digging it up and moving it to an upland lined landfill, a modern upland lined landfill away from the side of our rivers. That can be done. It takes time. It's going to be trucks or train. There are a multitude of opportunities that are different from what kind of the story is getting told. So we see all the opportunities to do a better job, but most importantly, to permanently close the coal ash pond.
Yeah, so there's no magic wand that's going to make the coal ash disappear.
Right.
So
right.
Any of that discussion, let's talk about the real discussion is, here it is, do you cap it in place or like y'all are advocating for, do you move it upland somewhere away from waterways and aligned and put it there?
Yes.
Where do you...
Let's
do it. We'll run to the break and come back, because I wonder, where do you take something like that?
Welcome.
We'll continue to get that conversation here and your questions. You got questions? The phone number, 343-0106, 343-0106. We'll get them asked right here on Midday Mobile. And, some coming in here. Yeah, you can hit us up on the text line as well, as Tim has done. We'll get these questions asked when we return.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back, Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5. Our guest, Casey Calloway, Kate Kistler, Mobile Baykeeper, talking about a meeting coming up tomorrow night at the Hampton Inn in Saraland. So let's talk about that before we go right back into some of the questions here from the text line. The importance of that meeting, the purpose of that meeting is what?
It is ADEM's permit hearing. So ADEM, there's a draft permit for closure of the coal ash pond,
okay,
and the public gets to comment on that. So it's not a place for you to go and say, I just hate it. It's a place for you to go and say, I disagree with your plan because it will impact, it will negatively impact our environment, our natural resources. Here's what we think is wrong with the permit. There's a ton of great information on our website, as well as some talking points if you need them. MobileBaykeeper.org/coal ash.
So somebody coming tomorrow is not to just, like I said, this is not a discussion of waving a wand. It's not disappearing.
Right. No, it's not. We've got a real issue we have to address.
And it can't keep going. It's not ongoing. So it's where is it going to be kept in place, or is it going to be moved away from the edge of the river? All right. So that starts at what time?
Well, 6 o'clock is the public hearing. We're asking folks to gather at 5:30 to just get there. If you need talking points, if you need to know anything more, we're going to be there early and you know, just ready to talk to folks. We expect the media to be there. We expect a lot of folks to turn out and really, so we can also talk to each other. The problem with COVID is we won't get to hear what other people are saying for several days. It'll get posted on a YouTube video after the fact, but they'll put people individually in a room to give their presentation. ADEM will hear it, but the rest of the community won't for several days.
Okay.
It's just what, it's a COVID rule. This was, all these public hearings are challenged because of COVID.
Like so many things out there. Yeah, we were talking about this before we went to the news break, Kate, talking about the dam, and this is good because you're speaking my language. Y'all were both speaking my language during the break because I spent a lot of time over the years on the river, and you said, so, and let me go back to Tim's question. Tim said, I'd like to know how much the river would have to be up for all this to take place. What kind of floodwater would we have to have? And so we talked about that during the break. Y'all were up there. The Barry steam plant reading on the Mobile is going to like 11.6. I think we're in the tens right now. Yeah. What did it look like? Where is the water on this dam you're talking about?
Yeah, so at about 9 to 10 feet at that gauge up at Barry is when you start to see water, you know, inundating the dam, literally flooding the dam, right? And so now the river, the Mobile River, you know, massive Mobile River, is now running alongside the dam. And if you've been up the Mobile River at flood stage, you know, it's not the most fun experience. That thing's moving logs. It's got some power behind it. And so, you know, it's not the kind of water you want to earthen dam in for any period of time. So as the river gets higher, anytime once that dam's in, I think you're in a danger zone. What would it cause? You know, what exactly would it take to cause a spill? I don't think there's an exact agreement on that. We've seen repairs that were done when we thought that the dam did not look like it was in great shape after some severe flooding a few years ago.
And last year we had the gigantic, was 16 feet at Barry, 17 feet.
And this comes back to the point Casey mentioned earlier. You know, the levees in New Orleans were solid until they weren't, right? And so you're talking about a coal ash pond that the heavy metals, they aren't going to go anywhere. The heavy metals don't go away over time. The river, it ain't going anywhere either. It's been here before we were here. It's going to be here when we're gone. So you're leaving this infrastructure, right? Infrastructure fails, this earthen dam, and saying, hey, we're just going to keep protecting this thing forever. You know, at best, we're pushing a problem off until next hurricane season. Or at worst, we're pushing a problem off until next hurricane season. But at best, this is going to fail eventually. It's really a question of if not when you leave an earthen dam next to a massive river.
So if people have not looked at this specifically and can't picture it, the levee or the dam, we'll say the eastern side of the coal ash pond, is right now the only thing separating the coal ash pond from the Mobile River.
Yep. Right. There's a little bit of tree, a little bit of grass, a little bit of something, but it's, I mean, there's nothing. It's right up there. We were there on Saturday and got to see it. Cade and I went up last year at Mardi Gras when the flood stage was 8th highest elevation in recorded history last Mardi Gras. Scary. And before we even knew there was going to be a global pandemic, so we were worried about that.
Right.
But you could see, you know, we've seen it over the years, is there's little bits of trickles of water coming out of the side of the dam. That's called piping. And what we understand from anybody who's ever had a dam...
Is this water flowing through to come out on the riverside?
Yes. We can only stand on the water side because that's the... Right. That's legal. We're not trespassing that way.
Yeah, it was a dry day. It wasn't raining. It wasn't water coming down off the top. It was literally seeping out of the side. This was... Yeah, a couple years ago, we were up there inspecting and saw that happening.
That people that have had a farm pond or something like that here and that, that's that make them nervous.
Made me nervous.
It made us nervous. And we've also, you know, we've done some sampling too, and this was Mobile Baykeeper spent 15 and 16 doing research. We didn't talk about this much then. We did significant research. We did we took samples of our own. We worked with states across the Southeast to figure out what are they doing. And that's when we put together our coal ash, our plant berry report. And that is, this is a 200 and some odd page document. We hired a dam safety expert to review all of the publicly available records. Again, Alabama Power did not give us permission to be in the site or for him to review or for him to take samples at the site. He just did a records review and found significant concern. And that's what we reported in 2017. So and then 2018 is when we learned that Alabama Power is also polluting the groundwater. So learned a ton more when the coal combustion, the CCR rule, said you have to report groundwater contamination levels. And that's when we learned a little bit more, too, about how much coal ash is in the water table, is in the groundwater table at Plant Berry.
And one other thing that's worthwhile, how much would it take to cause a spill like this, is to look at some of the things that have happened in other states. So we mentioned Kingston. I think that was like a 5-inch rain event. Heavy rain for up there, not that heavy for down here. And every dam's going to be different, obviously. We didn't talk about North Carolina, but during Hurricane Florence, there were two coal ash facilities that had spills because of the rain from Hurricane Florence. Now, that was a pretty catastrophic hurricane, but it seems like every year somebody's telling me, hey, this is never flooded until, you know, Hurricane Sally. I'd never seen the water that high until, you know, whatever it may be. And it just seems like that's a trend going forward that we're going to have to be prepared for.
I want to get back to this, too, because it sounds like there's two parts of this. There's chronic, which is this groundwater situation we'll get into, and acute is the fear of an all-out levee burst.
Right.
Speaking of which, so Steve on the text line says, if there is a spill, what are the consequences? Civil and criminal prosecution, fines, who cleans it up, who pays?
And we think that's an excellent question. What we've kind of understood is, and it's one of the questions that we have so much, Alabama Power, per the Public Service Commission, is allowed to charge the public whatever they want to pay for closing this coal ash pond, and whatever that means. And they're already charging us about $450 or so per person.
We've been paying on this.
Oh, we've been paying on this for a couple of years. And so we understand that the PSC can make us pay for any required federal law, state law changes. So that's just the rule in Alabama. What we had understood is that the PSC could not make us pay for a failure. And people have brought that up that maybe they can. And I think the PSC needs an overhaul. But that is something that we got to look at really closely. Alabama Power should not, under any circumstances, be allowed to charge the public if there's a breach of that dam. So we'll certainly be ready to fight that. Well, no, we got to close this thing right. We're not going to fight that fight.
That's what I'm talking about. And we've got like about a minute here, and we'll come back and talk. But closing it right is moving it. You mentioned it earlier.
Moving it.
So are we digging it up and moving it away? Explain what is that?
Well, I think, you know, again, looking at what other states are doing, there's 250 million tons of coal ash being removed in other states, and they're either putting it in trains or putting it in trucks and moving it to either modern line landfills, because what we got right now is an unlined pit on the side of the river. So they're either moving it to a modern line landfill or they're recycling it into concrete.
Okay, and something people like to talk about, too, with that. We'll come back from the break. We'll talk more about this. Once again, the meeting is
tomorrow night, 6 o'clock at the Hampton Inn in Saraland, but come at 5:30.
And this is in front of ADEM, Alabama Department of Environmental Management, for them, their process of making a decision, right?
Their process of making a decision. They need to hear from the public that we do not find this acceptable. But come if you're for it, too. We want to make sure that everybody's there. We want to hear everybody's voice on this issue. It's critical for us across the state.
Coming right back, more on the coal ash issue and what's happening tomorrow night with Mobile Baykeeper.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back, y'all. Midday Mobile, this segment brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK, online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. That's my buddy Trey, doing great work in Mobile and Baldwin counties. Has worked here for the radio station and at our house and my in-laws' house as well. If you've got junk, you need it gone inside the house, outside the house, backyard. Maybe the trampoline and swing set and playhouse are still there. Your youngest child's in their 30s. Time to let it go. Let it go. Let Trey and the crew pick that up and move it out. It could be a storage unit. You don't even know what's in there, but you pay every month. Every month, get rid of the junk. 1-800-GOT-JUNK will set an appointment time on a day that works for you. And they find a window of time that works for you. None of this, they'll be there sometime between Monday at 8 a.m. and Friday night at 9 p.m. No, they find a day that works and a window of time. They set an appointment. They show up. They quote your price. If you say yes, they get to work and get it done right then. It's 1-800-GOT-JUNK, online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. All right, continue our conversation with the crew from Mobile Baykeeper, Kate Kistler and Casey Calloway. Tomorrow night is the meeting. Once again, at 5:30 to get there.
5:30 to get there. Hampton Inn in Saraland. You can see it from I-65. You just got to kind of snake around to get to it.
Right.
But it's a great location. It is going to be a COVID safe, so they're only going to let a couple of people in at a time.
Like just these people come in, then you go back out and the others.
Yeah, and that's the challenge because we don't get to hear what other folks are saying.
Right.
They'll put it up online later, but we have talking points. We've got anything you want to know, any questions you have, we're going to be there early so we can share information with folks.
A bunch of questions here on the text line, but this one, so Chris says, would a retaining wall or concrete dam help? So would that help with the situation?
I mean, I think it absolutely would help. The more you do, the more it helps. But I think the problem, again, becomes infrastructure fails. And so, I've got a kid. He asked me the other day, am I going to be able to swim in the bay when I told him I was going up to this coal ash pond? We don't want to put this problem off for 6 months or 5 years or 20 years. We want to deal with it and get it done and not pay for it once and then pay for it again after a spill or we realize that this isn't working. So I think it would help. But infrastructure eventually fails. It's not the right spot to leave it.
And there's this other part of it, the chronic, right? Y'all are talking about the leaching. So now we're not talking about the acute bursting of a levee, but we're talking about getting into the water table.
So, you're in the groundwater. And one of the things that's going to be required in order to maintain the cap in place, to leave it where it is you have to pump water off of that site in perpetuity. And to keep the groundwater out.
To keep
the pond from filling up. But I think, we all know as sea levels rise, as the water table rises, you've got more and more and more water you're going to have to keep getting off that site. We know the law says you can't leave your coal ash pond in place if you're in contact with groundwater. So we know we're in contact with groundwater.
And those ponds are not lined.
Those ponds are not lined. There is natural clay, but it is not sealing the entire bottom of the pond under any circumstances. There is no complete closure that you can feel protected against under any circumstances. It is not, there is no liner. And we believe move it to an upland lined landfill, a modern landfill, or recycle it into concrete. We want to build a bridge. Let's figure out how to build the bridge with
using
some coal
concrete?
Ash. Exactly.
Okay. And so the idea of moving it.
Yes.
So this discussion has come up that in moving it, the process of, whether it's a front-end loader or whatever is taking it, putting it in trucks, and those trucks are going up the road, that it's spreading this coal ash when it does that.
Well, that's, again, let's go with the word modern, and let's follow what the law says. You're not allowed to drive a truck down the road with stuff spraying out of the back of it. Those signs on the trucks that say, call my employer if I'm doing the wrong thing? That's what that is.
Well, and I think, we don't have to imagine what might or would happen because we know what's happening in the Southeast, where we know there's been successful removal of coal ash in North Carolina, Virginia, and South Carolina, and Tennessee and Georgia even. And those people up there are pleased with what's happening, protecting their groundwater, protecting their rivers, and they're seeing results.
And they're doing this. They're putting it in some kind of mechanism, truck or train or something, and moving it to an upland site.
Right.
Yes, it's about putting a top on it. I mean, you're not running down the road with, fly ash spraying out of the back of the truck. That's not responsible or reasonable. And no trucking firm would ever do that. It would violate all the rules.
Yeah, they've removed 17 million tons in South Carolina, and they're removing 125 million in North Carolina, another 30 million in Virginia. Georgia Power's removing or lining almost 50 million. So this is happening. This is happening all around the Southeast. We don't need to put the blinders on because we know that our neighbors are getting clean water because their utilities are doing the right thing. And Alabama Power does the right thing when they they come after the hurricane. We know they're, you know, they're such a great community company. Now it's time to make another good decision rather than going in this direction.
So there it is. The idea of moving it to another site because it's not going to disappear.
Right.
And instead of leaving it in place, once again, tomorrow, this meeting with ADEM to decide on a permit for this? Or, I mean, what permit.
They have to have a permit to close the pond. They also,
and what does that mean by closing the pond? Because they're not putting coal ash in it now, right?
Right. Well, that's part of the, that's another part of the rule. The coal combustion residual rule, the federal rule that said you have to close ponds. So they are no longer allowed to store it, to store the ash wet.
Okay.
That's the slurry, the pond is all about. The, exactly. So they're dry storing it, and we understand that they're recycling a good bit of that concrete, of that ash right now into concrete, not just sending it off to a local landfill.
Yeah, they recycled about 85% of it last year. So we know that there are markets for this, and like I said, in Virginia, North Carolina, they're recycling tens of millions of tons. So there's definitely a market to be able to do this. And it defrays the cost for the utility. Instead of just getting rid of this as waste, you're selling it, and you're, you know, if it's, you're not breaking even, you're making some back.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the idea here is it's going to be none of these, if everybody's looking here, none of these options, cap in place or move, are not going to cost us anything. It's already costing us on our bill, right?
Absolutely. We're already paying for it. And so Alabama Power has not been really forthcoming with costs. So we've had to do a lot of guesstimating, and the numbers have changed over and over the last 5 years. But Cade's got him down pat. He's done crazy math.
Got about 2 minutes here. So what's it cost?
So right now, Alabama Power is estimating to close all these ponds throughout the state, right? Plant Berry or Berry Steam Plant is not the only one. It's $3.3 billion. Berry, their estimate's $896 million to close it in place, right? Okay. And we're paying about $5.29. What's that mean for me? About $5.29 on an average residential monthly bill. That should be about how much your rates increased because of this. You know, we looked at these numbers in North Carolina and Virginia, and obviously everywhere is different. But based on that math, it looks like it'd be, you know, maybe an increase of about 90 cents a month to move this ash out from Plant Berry. That it would cost more to close it by removal or by recycling, but it's not astronomically more. It's
90 cents a month more. So, I mean, talk about
10, 11 bucks a year.
11 bucks a year.
Yep.
Beyond what it is right now.
Yeah.
Right. And again,
to move it.
And again, Alabama Power hadn't provided any of these alternatives. So I think people should be telling their elected officials they need to give us that information. There's all these other states, they have the information in front of them. So the public was able to make an educated. This
that's
shouldn't
what I've
be
been asking for a year,
math.
Right? Yeah. Let's look at the numbers.
We've been
y'all have. But I mean, I just joined it late. But I mean, for anybody to make the decision, you have to say, Here's choice A, here's choice B.
So I think that's really important. Number one is the Public Service Commission should not be making us do this, because Cade can also tell you that on average, Alabama Power has profited about $1 billion a year for the last 5 years. Profit, $1 billion per year for the last 5 years. So if that's the case, so maybe we shouldn't pay that 90 cents extra or the $5.50, but if we're going to, if we're required
that's
to.
That's the difference in your estimation of what the cost would be.
Yeah, that's about right. Yep.
And so I would love for your listeners to say, if we have to pay, I don't think we should.
Okay.
But if we have to pay, are they willing to pay up to a dollar more a month, up to $12 a year for it to be a permanent closure that we don't have to worry about it being on the side of the river for the next hurricane to come?
There we go. A lot to think about. Once again, people want to get more, your website.
MobileBaykeeper.org/coalash.
Okay, and the event tomorrow night, and you want people to get there, they're going to go in and say their piece and then come out.
Yep.
They'll have a scheduled time they get to come in. If they hadn't signed up, they can sign up tomorrow night, and they can send a letter, because this comment period is open for written comment, too. So MobileBaykeeper.org/coalash, you can get on there. There's a take action button, and you can send a letter. We've already got it all linked up and ready to go straight to ADEM.
So okay, if somebody is not going to be there personally, they can send this letter.
Absolutely. Yep. Get there from our website, MobileBaykeeper.org/coalash.
All right, very good. Thank you for coming in, bringing more attention to this. Y'all been doing it for quite a while, and this discussion is at least coming to not ahead, but a juncture point tomorrow night.
Yep.
All right. There it is. Coming right back to wrap it up here on Midday Mobile.